Television is covered very well here. We've got the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family, which were huge. These were mega hits in their day. The Brady Bunch even spun off, I don't know how many other related series, but these were really extraordinary. What do you think the death of David Cassidy means to this era? Because he was just an extraordinarily popular, like a sort of a superstar of the early 70s.
Yes, that was such sad news, because he was tragically young, and he had just announced earlier in the year that he realized he had dementia, and that was actually a pet cause for him, because his mother, Evelyn Ward, had dementia, and I've interviewed him, I think, about five times, and excerpted the grooviest from those interviews in Groovy. But he warned that it would be an epidemic for baby boomers. But yes, for young ladies, we're not so young anymore, but for ladies of a certain age, David Cassidy was their teen idol. They marketed so much stuff, and it actually kind of irked them. There were David Cassidy dolls and David Cassidy love beads, and he said that if he was interviewed by the teen magazines, and he said, and they said, if they said, who do you like, who are the musicians you admire, he would say Cream and Jimi Hendrix, and then they would print that David loves the Monkees, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He had to separate himself from the Keith Partridge image. He said the Keith Partridge character was totally the antithesis of who I was. But he always maintained a sense of humor about it, and he performed until a year before he realized he had dementia. And he still performed those great old Partridge Family songs, like, you know, Point Me in the Direction of Albuquerque, a great song.
And I Think I Love You, which was huge, and it's still a great song.
Yeah, that was the very first song he ever recorded, ever, and it was a number one hit. People think that it was Bubblegum, but really, it's not. If it had all these great players on it, and arrangers and composers. If you listen to those songs, they are exquisitely crafted pop songs.
You had a wonderful image of David Cassidy on the cover of Life magazine. This shows his sort of superstar status at that time, 1971. You know, here's David Cassidy's great, great cover, and it looks like it's probably in front of the bus. I see all of the all the colors behind
it. You're right, I didn't think of that.
I'm not sure if it is or not, but there's a lot of colors there, so maybe it's meant to resemble the bus, but wonderful image. As a matter of fact, we should talk about the images in the book. This is heavily illustrated, and it's really fun just to even flip through it and see the extraordinary collection of images that you have acquired and really pieced together for all of us. I mean, I'm seeing Partridge Family lunchboxes and games, and this is part of the marketing of that era as well, and comic books. Tell me about the images. How did you acquire the images? Are some of these from your collection? Are they from other people who were able to supply them to you?
Yeah, a little of both, Larry. Like, it's funny you mentioned the Partridge Family. That is my lunchbox and my game board.
Really?
And my
okay.
Records. Yeah, and I took those photos. But it wasn't always that way. But the previous book, Monster Mash, I designed this as well. So what I'm hoping that people notice, like, for instance, in the Partridge Family section, the backgrounds behind all the editorial are the Mondrian style of the Partridge Family bus. In the Laugh-In section, the backgrounds resemble the psychedelic walls that would be behind Dan Rowan and Dick Martin, and then Judy Korn or Joanne Worley would stick their head through a door. Like, it wasn't just the images, but also the fun part was also just trying to capture, like, trying to make it so that when you're in the Brady Bunch section, you know it's appropriate graphically. Like, the Brady Bunch section's full of daisies, you know. So different little themes, graphic themes, besides just the art. But You know, the art, the memorabilia collages were so much fun to do, as they were with Monster Mash, you know. And I think people respond to those because I remember I was doing the New York Comic Con, and a woman looked in to the Monkees memorabilia spreads and said, "Oh, I had all this stuff." You know, it brings back memories.
It does.
Even if you didn't have it, it's fun to look at. But the Groovy era presented another opportunity just to get really psychedelic, because psychedelic is one of those things where, you know, there's a lot of like psychedelic patterns that I use in Groovy, and it's you want to walk that fine line between going overboard because it is psychedelic and anything goes, but not sacrificing legibility or reader accessibility.
It's really wonderfully done. I can't imagine putting this all together. It's really quite a feat, I have to say. You know, from the standpoint of just looking at it, it's stunning, and I really enjoy that. And I enjoy the writing.
From your lips to God's ears, Larry. I'm sorry.
I enjoy the writing as well, because not only is it so sumptuously illustrated, but the writing in there is really extraordinary as well. I love your writing about Greg Brady's Groovy bedroom. Can you tell me about that?
Oh yeah, that was such that episode. When I watched it, I was seeing myself on the TV screen, because I had that same kind of bedroom. I used my long cutting money to buy, spinning psychedelic lamps and incense burners, and I had a skull ashtray, lots of posters, lots of like Day Glow posters and psychedelic posters. And then I didn't really buy the stuff to wear, but then one day they have an episode of the Brady Bunch, and Greg, you know, is starting to get rebellious, and he wants his own room, and I think he moves into his father's father's an architect, so he moves into his father's architect studio and just turns it groovy. And but he also goes a step further, and he has like Peter Fonda shades and a fringe vest and, you know, love beads. So I didn't go that far. My dad wouldn't let me, but I did have the posters and the lights.
It's a lot of fun to read about that, and that brings back a lot of memories too. I'm sure that had an impact on a lot of people, because Greg Brady was, you know, this middle American sort of ideal on television at that time, and here he was really getting into the groovy stuff. So I'm sure that had a major impact on some of the young viewers.
The weird thing about that, though, by the time Greg Brady was getting into it in the real groovy world, it had already been sort of evaporating. So the real honest to goodness like hippies were starting to go straight and get jobs, and you know, Altamont was a disastrous concert that sort of spelled the end of the era. But grooviness was carried on thanks to Greg Brady.
It was, and I think that's a good point that you make, because that show was kind of a little bit behind. It kind of trailed the times a little bit, because we even have Marcia Brady having a date with Davy Jones, and by that time the Monkees had kind of faded out. Isn't that right?
Yeah, and Desi Arnaz Jr., and of course by that time Dino, Desi, and Billy were gone too. Yeah, that was the charming thing. Like, grooviness kind of died in real life, but it survived and in the living room. You know, the Saturday morning cartoons did the same thing. They would have these shows like the Banana Splits and H.R. Puff and stuff are extremely psychedelic. They just borrowed all that stuff and they used rock music, and they used all the psychedelic tricks, but in the real world, psychedelia was pretty much run its course. But it continued on Saturday morning television and in primetime shows like the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family. So you had like gullible kids like my age, like watching this stuff and thinking, "Oh, the world is still groovy," but it really wasn't.
And tell me about the Beatles. The Beatles were the subject of a Saturday morning television cartoon as well. And you write in the book that they really weren't that interested in it. They licensed their images and names, is that right?
Yeah, well, the Beatles, the Saturday morning cartoon, they really had very little to do with, but they didn't like it. They saw it and they didn't like it. And it's very charming, and it has all the real songs. And to a lot of kids, people my age, that was our introduction to the song. The first time I heard the song Babies in Black, it was on the Saturday morning cartoon, because I was too young to buy the albums. But that was done by a New Yorker named Al Brodax, And he animated that series.